This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Any Kind of Danger, Building Our Connection with Animals. And the author is Dr. Rowan Blogg, and Dr. Blogg joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Dr. Blogg.
Good morning to you, Steve, or should I be saying, good afternoon.
Well, you're coming to us all the way from Australia, and it's great to have you with us. Let me read a couple things about your book so everyone understands what we're going to talk about. You say, we must know the animals. We must respect the planet, and we've got to understand how the animals play such a vital role in our life here upon this planet, and we've got to really take care of them, don't we?
Yes, yes.
And a lot of people, unfortunately, just take advantage, and they only see animals for their commercial gain.
There's a lot more to it than commercial gain. It saddens me when we have such good friends in the animals that we can do things which are not necessary.
Well, Dr. Blogg, tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to write your book.
Well, I had animals as a kid, like most of us, and I got fired up about animals. And when I went into practice, I happened to open up near a seeing eye school for the blind, and this put me in close contact with seeing eye dogs for the blind, and that let me see the connection and how well they can look after us and what beautiful beings they are. We had to know more, and that's how I started. I was lucky enough. I started at a time when there was no formal teaching in ophthalmology, and for reasons that we don't fully understand, I had to come to America to further my knowledge, where I knew there were people who were also interested in animal eyes. And when I arrived at a school where there was no teacher in ophthalmology. However, all the staff were very kind to me. And while I was teaching there, lo and behold, a leading ophthalmologist, Kirk Gillett, came and joined the staff. Now, that is one of those magic things that happened to you. And that's what happened to me. So I was on the way to learn about ophthalmology and on the way to studying this specialty.
What would you say our greatest gaps are in understanding animals?
Well, I think we fail to realize that they are our teachers, that telepathy occurs, and that is this transmission of thought between animals and people. And we don't value their natural instincts as much as we should. We fellow travellers with them, and our greatest gap is not knowing. We have to know more about our animals and their wonderful intuitive feelings and what they can do for us.
So what other great benefits do we receive from animals?
Well, they are friends. They give us love, unconditional love. They help us when we're sick, or help us when we're grieving, help us when we feel disturbed. If we feel low, and I'm concerned that in some parts of the world that suicide is very prevalent, so I say when you're feeling low, have a dog in tow. They are great friends to us. They're great friends.
Now, your goal is to educate people to look at animals in a much different way. More of our friends, our teachers, even a lot of healing can come from them. And of course, many animals are exploited for their food for us. Chickens are manipulated and caged in terrible ways. I mean, the list goes on and on, doesn't it?
It does, and it is very, very sad. I say we need to learn as toddlers from our families the value of animals so we cannot think of exploiting like we do. We don't need meat. Most of our past is involved, I'm talking about, well, many millions of years. There's only 1.5 million years when we were in the 24 million years of mankind and our ancestors and ourselves, only 1.5 million years where we were meat eaters. We had 24 million years where we did not eat meat. So meat is really not an essential food for mankind. We've come to like it. It is, of course, intentionally promoted by advertising, and people make money out of it, and that's led us down a path where we shouldn't be.
So the human species has become literal mass murderers?
I think so, and it sounds like an overstatement at first glance, but you're right. You're right. We are the mass murderers. Animals don't do that. They fight each other, but they will thump their chests in the jungle and then retreat back into the jungle, and no blood is shed. We are vindictive. We say, I don't like the politics of that country. I'm going to kill a lot of the citizens there. We are unhappily the mass murderers of the planet, and that makes me sad. It's not necessary.
We're headed toward a world population by the year 2050 of 9 billion people upon the planet. What does that mean of how we need to help the animal population? Now, how do we two coexist here and help each other?
This is a big challenge, and you've hit the nail right on the head of how we should be thinking. We don't need meat. We know that it's an inefficient way to feed. We know that we should eat vegetable protein, and we can do so. We've proved it over millions of years, and we've got to concentrate and be aware that we've got to use our land the best way possible. And we know that 10 acres would only feed 2 people with beef, but 61 people with soybeans. Now, it's much more gentle on the planet if we steer away from heavy meat production.
So we need...
We've got to change our minds about what we eat.
So we need to become animal guardians.
Yes. A very good word, animal guardians. We are their guardians. That's what we are. They're our fellow travellers, and they're not below us. They're fellow travellers, and we are their caretakers. I like the word caretaking. That's how we should feel. They caretake us. When we're in strife, animals look after us. When we're in emotional strife, they do, and other strife, they can tell. They've got this incredible telepathy which can operate miles and miles away. They know when we're coming home. We know when our favourite family member's coming to visit us, because the animals get excited. A little bird in a cage will call out, Robbie, 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 a few days before Robbie comes home from boarding school. They're very aware of us, and we've got to be aware of them.
And as you pointed out, an autistic boy, he couldn't talk, he wouldn't talk, but just by hanging out with a little woolly dog, he spoke his first words.
Yeah, this is a typical example of our connection and a wonderful, wonderful mystic attachment animals have to us. And it makes me feel emotional.
Well, it's something that, like most of us, just take animals for granted. Some are more connected. Obviously, we have pets that we love, and they become very important parts of the family. But when we look out at the general population of animals, all the different kinds of animals, boy, kids today, like you've pointed out, really need to be taught at a very early age the value of animals.
And we're aware that there's 2 million species of animals, at least, on the planet, and we've gradually got to learn about all those. That's a big challenge.
And many of them are going extinct, or they are extinct.
Yes, they are. The one typically in Australia, which meant I hurried this book along a bit, because the koala, which is not a bear, but it's a special native species here, and that's heading for extinction, and we're not aware of their habits, so we do things which kills them off, and we don't always know why. We haven't studied them. We haven't learned. We've learned other less important stuff when we were at school.
So what would you say is a balanced life for us as humans? What's a balanced life?
Well, a balanced life involves us being able to observe how animals live with each other, and knowing what goes on in the jungle, having a contact with animals. Perching birds are especially good teachers. There's many species of perching birds who are wonderful to watch, love nature, know our animals, and it's a great challenge. We've got a huge challenge ahead of us because we get so carried away with making dollars, we forget easily that there is a wonderful life we can have without making dollars as our main reason for living. We need it, of course we do, but get a hobby with, if you can't take all the 2 million species in, which is understandable, get a hobby, make it a hobby that we choose one species and learn lots about that. So we are well versed at least in one species. And our little kids, when they're toddlers, we can teach them, and then the animals teach us.
You focus on different groups of animals. What are some of your favorite ones that you have advocated care of in your book?
Well, I've mentioned the dog, because seeing eye dogs had heightened my interest and my stimulus to further care. But the dog would come up number one because we've all got easy access to them. But there are many others. I think the perching birds are one, is a great hobby, perching birds, and they're so, and they can talk to us. And they're so beautiful, and they can migrate from one pole to the other without assistance. Their migration patterns, even seeing a V formation of birds flying across in the sky, and they all stay in communication, one bird in the lead and the others are going back in this V formation. This is just one of the wonders of nature. It's a wonder. Look, there isn't any need for... We've got to get interested in birds before we even can think of taking mood-altering drugs. Animals can alter our mood. We don't need drugs. But that could happen. Horses were one of my favourite when I was growing up, and they just interact with us. You heard of riding for the disabled. That's one of the things that horses help us to make our disadvantaged, our disabled people feel better and relate better to the people around them, like autistic kids.
So as we approach the future with such a huge increase in population, we've just got to do more to think more clearly about how we, live here on this planet with all these animals that are so vital to us, and teach our children, because they are the future.
And curtail our natural instinct to see a block of land and say to ourselves, I can make money out of that block of land. I can clear fell. When I've clear felled, I spray it with a poison to stop any further growth. And the further growth, of course, is where the wildlife will live if we let it. We've got to curtail all that, restrict all that, and say, no, we don't really own that land. We have a use of it for a while, and we share it with the rest of the planet and the species that want to live in that environment. So important to us to keep us in a balanced way. And I feel very strongly against violence. Indeed, I started off a Vets Against Violence group here because of the value of animals leading us along a much happier, more contented, non-dollar earning path.
We've been listening to Dr. Rowan Blogg. He is the author of his book, Any Kind of Danger, Building Our Connection with Animals. Dr. Blogg, tell us how to get your book.
Balboa Press is the publisher, and you can buy it, as I know it, in any bookstore. Balboa Press will advise. Buy it at the local bookstore is the answer, I'd say. Now, I'm a little distant from Texas, so I'm just not sure. I've got a book launch in Melbourne, ask at your local bookstore is my answer.
Sure. Very good. Yes, you can order it from any online or walk-in stores.
Yes, so. Yes. All of the above, yes.
Well, Dr. Rowan Blogg, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you much. My pleasure. Great talking to you, Steve. I really enjoyed our conversation.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, All the Steps I Have Taken, Then and Now. And the author is Linda L. Christensen. And Linda joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Inspiring Voices. Hello, Linda.
Good morning, Steve.
Great to have you with us. Let me read what you've written about your book. You say this: my book takes you from my admittance day at 6.5 months old to the hospital for care to my final steps as my journey continues today. It tells my entire life of living with polio. I never knew any other way since I was so young contracting the disease. It simply is a book of encouragement and inspiration for others to do what they can with what they have. So life can be very fulfilling, even with great challenges, and you're proof of that, aren't you, Linda?
Yes, I am. I have been very, very active in church, home, community, all around.
So it all went back to 6.5 months old. That must have been so challenging for your parents at that time. Obviously, you were so young, you probably don't even remember.
The earliest recall, Steve, that I have of being a child that had some challenges before me was probably at about the age of 5 or 6 years old. When my parents took me to the hospital at that age of 6.5 months on that October 1st day, they were just 24 and 23 years old, had an older sister, 2.5 years older, and I became sick on September the 12th, according to my medical records. So born on February 27th puts me right at just that 6 months old when I got sick. And my mom had taken me to the doctor in our little local town every day for about a week. And finally the day came when she went to change my diaper, and I cried a very lot because of the pain that I was now having in my legs, my lower extremities. So the doctor said, because Rochester is so full of patients, they're going to tell you that they are too full if we call. So he just suggested to my mom that I get my father out of the cornfield. October is harvest in Minnesota. So she went right to the field and said, we have to take Linda to Rochester. And they said, don't call, just go. Because if you show up on the doorstep, they pretty much have to admit Linda. So my father left the field. The farmers in the field, according to one that I visited with as a young boy at the time, said that everybody's heart just sank because what they had feared was probably becoming a reality, and that I would be probably diagnosed with polio.
Because you were a very small, close-knit community.
Very small-knit, close community. When you live in the Midwest, in small rural communities, your churches are country churches, so it becomes a very, very small-knit community involving all the farm families that lived within a 10-mile radius, perhaps. And when I grew up in the Corning area, there were many, many families that were young like my folks and probably had one or two children. So the whole community was becoming a little bit concerned. In fact, from 1948 to 1953, there were so many cases of polio that families didn't take their children to the county fair. They didn't take them to swimming pools. They didn't take them to any large areas where there would be lots of people because they feared for their children, didn't want the children to pick up the virus.
You were 5 or 6 when you first remembered that you were different. Was it difficult for you to deal with that? I mean, were you made fun of, or was it just something that you were able to handle? What do you remember?
When I was little, we went to a country school, and all the kids on our road we were the furthest to the east. So my sisters and brother and younger sister would ride our bikes to school, and we'd pick up families along the way. And I don't remember anyone ever being not to me at that time. And I never had any situations that you would call it teasing back then, but now it would be reflected as bullying until I was in seventh grade. And then I did have a situation. But as far as remembering any of people being disrespectful at a young age, I do not remember that. And I just remember having surgeries in the summertime. So the first surgery that I remembered was probably at the age of about 5 or 6. And by that time, I'd already had my very first surgery was when I was 2 years old. I had surgery on my right foot. Exactly on my birthday, February 27th, and I was 2 years old. My parents would take me to the doctor every February or March, and they would evaluate my progress, see if there was any declining in any of the muscles or situations that needed to be taken care of. And my dad would say that they would just look at my parents and say, we don't know for sure what we need to do, but we have to do something. Because one leg would be growing longer, a foot would be turning in, different situations. So they would decide what they needed to do, and as soon as I got done with school, second grade, third grade, whatever grade it was, I'd be admitted into the hospital to have another surgery to improve my mobility so that I was able to get around. My last surgery was when I was 15, and then I was able to be brace free, which was a glorious day when I was finally able to rid myself of that last brace.
So as a young girl, you were wearing braces on both legs?
Both legs. Mm. Yes.
Yes.
And it was grateful when I could finally get rid of that. For a girl, you know, we like to dress in fancier things, and boys can wear pants and cover up those things. But for girls, it's a little more difficult. And as a young child, the braces that needed to be attached to those shoes were lovely high-top boy brown leather shoes, which are very unattractive for a little girl. I had to wear a lift on my left shoe, which would add height so that that leg, I wouldn't walk with such a significant limp. And that's not very becoming on the bottom of a shoe. And for girls, that's a little bit more of a challenge, and we have a little more desire to not have those things.
So after 15, no more braces but crutches?
No more anything.
No more anything.
By the time I got to 16, a sophomore in high school, I was finally rid of all of those things. My doctor did suggest that I could probably use the help of a cane, but I just looked at him and sort of said, you've got to be kidding. I'm rid of all this. I'm not going to be using a cane. And I didn't go back to using a cane and just until about the last 5 years. I had to return to wearing braces when I was 36. So I had 20 years where I was able to be as normal as possible. I didn't have to wear any braces, didn't use crutches, didn't use a cane. And then my left leg was just becoming so weak that I wasn't able to support the knee. So I had to go back to wearing a brace, and that was a very disappointing day. I could call my husband at home and say, I'm ready to return. I can be dismissed today, but we have to go to the brace shop. And that is, that was a very disappointing day when I had to go back to the brace. For my children at that time, they were 3, 9, and 12. And my daughter remembers my disappointment in having to go back to wearing a brace. The other two were younger, but she definitely remembers that I was very disappointed. But I needed to get around. I had a family to take care of. I didn't want to spend the rest of my days on crutches. So if I was going to be able to walk, I needed to put the brace back on.
But you've been able to overcome those disappointments and stay pretty positive.
Very positive.
How has that come about?
Well, when you start your day, you just have to put things in order. And my day begins always with a cup of coffee and my devotional book with Thomas Kincaid. He is the artist until this year. He passed away, but he has a wonderful devotional book that I do enjoy reading every day. And then at that point, you just start every day with a prayer. You just put your prayer out there. Then you have to pack up your patience. Patience is when I sit on the floor and get that brace on my leg and start thinking about my day, getting ready for the day. And then it's time to prioritize, put things in order that I need to get accomplished for the day. And then just be very persistent all day long. So those four P's are part of my day every day. Prayer, patience, prioritize, and persistence. Sometimes the persistence one gets me a little bit in trouble because I will tend to want to get more done in my day than I should probably try to get done in my day. So I have to do things in an order that lasts about 2 hours at each activity. So I can sit and sew for 2 hours. I can clean the house for 2 hours. I can maybe do some gardening for 2 hours, but I need to rotate, do some sitting, do some computer work, and then go back and do something else. So I just rotate my day all around so that I get some rest, sit-down time, and some very active time. It's important for me to control a weight factor as well, because to get around, if I were to not be busy, a person doesn't stay as active and you don't stay as healthy. So
right.
I ride my bike. I do all kinds of things to hang clothes on the line by the use of getting them to a chair with my cane, and then I can set them in the chair and then just put them on the clothesline. And my husband always asks me, why do you do that? I said, I need the exercise because it's important to not be overweight, and I work hard at that. So makes me stay healthier, being busy.
And the other P word that has been important for you is your profession. For so many years, you were, in fact, you were on your feet a lot, weren't you?
I was on my feet all day long when I was a registered dental assistant. When I first got my very first job, when I graduated from dental school back in 1967, they were just starting to use four-handed dentistry, which would give me the opportunity to be able to sit by the dental patient, and the doctor would sit on the other side. Prior to that, a dentist stood all the time and didn't use a dental assistant so very much. But when my class started their training, they were just starting to use the four-handed sit-down dentistry. So I was very, very fortunate to pick a profession that would allow me to do what I wanted to do. I had always thought I would love to be a nurse after being involved with so many nurses through my lifetime. But jeepers, that would be so nice to be able to do that. But I did soon realize that that is definitely on your feet all day long. And then the second profession, I thought, well, maybe I could be a hairdresser because I really liked that. But again, the realization of being on my feet all day would not be the best. So when I investigated into becoming a dental assistant, I thought, I think this one's going to be perfect. And after 42 years, it was perfect. I worked in four different offices in those 42 years. One of them was for 25 years. My last professional change was at age 51. My children were grown. Our youngest was now 17, and she said, you know, Mom, if you think you want to, you know, work in a different office, I'm big enough now that I can take care of myself. If I forget my library book, I can take care of that. And so she suggested, if you wanted to get a different job, go ahead and do that. And at that time, I was going to make a professional change. So I was interviewing for a new job as a dental assistant, and I'm thinking, I don't know how this is ever going to work. I'm 51 years old. I'm physically challenged, very obviously physically challenged. I'm not quite sure who's going to want to hire someone with those qualifications. But as the interview went on, I soon realized that my new opportunity was opening up, because the dentists that were doing the interviewing were very pleased with, first, my maturity. They liked my age, and I thought that was going to be a negative factor, but it wasn't, because they knew I'm going to show up for work every day, have very good work ethics, and I just portrayed that I would just be an asset to that office, and I was for 10 and a half years before I retired.
Well, one of your reviewers said, this story makes one realize how God works in their life through their adversity. And you are proof of that. She said, a true inspiration, Linda Christensen. She is the author of her book, All the Steps I Have Taken, Then and Now. Linda, tell us how to get your book.
Well, you can order my book on the Inspiring Voices website. You can type my name in the computer under Google, Linda L. Christensen, and it will bring you right to a page of information. Click on the one that's from Blooming Prairie, and there you will also find the Inspiring Voices link and other information. It has articles from the newspaper and things that I have done in the area. And now I have a new Facebook page, and when you bring up Facebook and put my name in, it brings right up a beautiful All the Steps I Have Taken Facebook page.
Well, thank you so much, Linda, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Very good, Steve. Thank you so much for having me on today, and you have a fabulous day.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Inspiring Voices.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole O'Dell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Politics 101, The Right Course, your handbook on current political issues. And the author is Joseph M. Weston, Sr., and Joe joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Abbott Press. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Steve. It's a pleasure to have this opportunity.
Well, grateful that you're here because you're going to help open our eyes to really the bottom line of what's going on in the political arena today. Your book is broken down into some 60-some sections to help us understand issues that are kind of bannered about, and we catch little bits and pieces here and there. But let me read in general what you've written about your book. You say this: what do you do if a subject of a political nature comes up in a conversation and you don't have anything of substance to contribute? You simply get out my handbook on political issues of today and read the relevant facts about it in minutes flat. Well, that's a great benefit, that's for sure, because they're broken down, again, in these 60 sections. That must have taken you quite a lot of research.
Yes. The challenge, Steve, to writing the book was boiling everything down to the most pertinent facts so that the book was not going to be thick and dry and boring. And at the same time, keeping it interesting. And time is of the essence for everybody today, and most people do not have a lot of time to brush up on the facts. If they hear a sound bite from a politician who's maybe using smoke and mirrors to get his viewpoint across and perhaps does not want the public to know what really happened in a certain event, or if the young person's way of getting news is from one of their very favorite comedians, such as Jon Stewart or David Letterman, and they hear some political information by way of a joke, they're not going to go on the internet and research the facts behind what they're hearing, you know, to see if it's being skewed to the left or to the right. And I felt a need to put together a book that there would be a source for them to go to get, you know, some facts on an issue, so that they wouldn't have to go on the internet and get 2 million results, you know, when if they were interested in getting the facts.
So it's a tool for easy reference, as you say, important facts about many particular issues that are coming up in the news. What would you say is one or two most important issues in politics today? What are we facing there?
Well, the most important issue is always the economy, as defined by all the journalists and political pundits. And as an example, all of the following metrics during the current administration have gone in the wrong direction. Job growth, real unemployment, not reported unemployment, jobs going overseas, housing starts, foreclosures, food stamp reliance, welfare spending, real income for families, gas prices, healthcare costs. All of these objective metrics have gone in the wrong direction over during the Obama administration. Yet, recent polls have shown that as many as 39% thought the president's policies were improving the economy. So there's a disconnect here, you know, factually and objectively. It's not just an opinion that people are not somehow getting it, that even though the president's positions and policies on the economy have, in fact, not worked, a lot of people are just not wanting to believe it. And it's, you know, a lot of political pundits are scratching their heads. And, you know, I think it's just because their needs are not getting met for having some place to go to, you know, to put it all together, some place that's not going to take them a lot of time to really figure out what's going on.
Obviously, a heavy national debt and unmanageable fiscal deficit will destroy the country. One of your themes in your book.
Absolutely. And I didn't want to emphasize that too much. That is just one of them. There have been many economic milestones, negative economic milestones, that's what I call them, that the president has presided over. One of them, as you mentioned, is the national debt, which has now exceeded, the number is higher than the actual gross national product of this country. In 2011, we had to borrow 36 cents on the dollar to pay for our spending, which is just crazy. Imagine, you know, somebody running their household that way. And the feds have been printing money to help pay for the deficit. And what happens is if somebody has money that they haven't earned and they're throwing it in the economy to bid up the cost of goods, eventually, I mean, it's a short-term solution to make money more available, but eventually it's going to, you know, cause high inflation at a later time. Another milestone has been a lot of the major international players met and excluded the U.S. from a meeting in which they were considering replacing the dollar as the reserve unit because the dollar continues to fall in value. And that is part of this administration's desire to create more money to pay for the growing deficit, to pay for the spending. And the dollar is continuing to fall, which is one of the reasons that gas prices continue to go up, because everything that we import is going to get more expensive because our dollar is worth less on the international market. The other unprecedented thing that occurred was when credit agencies such as Standard & Poor's downgraded the credit of the United States to pay its bills. This has never happened before in the history of our country. The Obama administration created a bipartisan commission to look at why what the solutions can be to reduce fiscal deficit and national debt, yet he virtually ignored them. So there's been so many economic milestones over the past 4 years. One would think that this would be a wake-up call for Americans hearing all this news, even if they don't understand what $16 trillion is. They should be able to understand that all of these bad things have happened, which have never happened before. And that should be one red flag after another that we're eventually going to go into serious economic turmoil if something is not done. Yet, the country doesn't seem to understand this.
No, of course, the press plays a very important part of the dissemination of all this information. I want to get your viewpoint on that, but I want to point out to everyone that your book is broken down into six different sections, a liberal political spectrum versus conservative political spectrum. Then you have leftist tendencies versus right-wing philosophies, democratic perspective versus Republican perspective, the legal left versus the legal right, the Constitution less God versus the Constitution and God, and then pro-choice versus pro-life. And of course, under each of these sections are various topics, and you have 60 of them in total. But let's get back to the about this so-called free press. Is the press free anymore?
I mentioned in my book, Steve, that the free press today is now defunct as we know it, meaning that there is so much corruption and bias that it's literally not free. We literally have a situation in this country where a very large company whose CEO is very close to the president has and is in charge of the commission to get America jobs. It's Jeffrey Engel. He's CEO of General Electric. And the company General Electric owns NBC and or one of the mainstream media stations. And, for example, MSNBC has always been a news organization that has shamelessly been promoting the president, helped him get elected. I mean, the media in this country is supposed to be objective. And is not supposed to be in bed, with the president of the United States. So that's just one example. Many media outlets are just shamelessly skewed to the left, and it is very difficult to get news today that comes from an unbiased source. So I would encourage Americans to look for news programs that at least would interview representatives of both the left and right point of view. There are news stations out there that do this.
So self-reliance is really the foundation of this nation, and we must get back to self-reliance.
Yeah, so that is a theme that I have in the book. We are becoming an entitlement nation. A couple of actions that the president has done that seems to not really be understood by a lot of Americans is, one, he had made some type of edict in which he was watering down the requirements for welfare recipients to receive welfare. Since Clinton passed the workfare program, there were certain stipulations to receiving your welfare check, and the president has allowed states to water down that requirement so that they don't have to work for it. The other example is he has advertised with our money the food stamp program to increase food stamp usage. He has earned the title food stamp president, and we do have a lot of excessive reliance on the government. If everyone in the country was more self-reliant, if there was a culture that, you know, dictated that you need to make your own way and that there's not always going to be the government that's going to be entitling you, then I think we would be a little bit, you know, going towards the right path in this country.
Well, there are very, very big challenges, very, very big issues, confusing issues. The polls are always reflecting the changing attitudes. It's amazing, I think, to most who favor limited government and self-reliance of how popular President Obama is. He comes across, I think, as a really nice guy and concerned about people and paints himself in a very favorable way. He's very good at that. But of course, his what he's done in the last several years just proves his programs are failing. And your book really points out all this.
Yes. Many voters and the electorate just are not into getting the facts and make judgments on candidates for president based on their smile, their likability, their families. In President Obama's case, the fact that he represented diversity seems to have meant so much to this country, and the fact that he represents pretty much a rags-to-riches story seems to excuse him for his poor performance. I guess that's, you know, part of our culture. It seems to be, you know, the presidential race is reduced in many people's mind to a popularity contest, almost as if you're voting for, you know, somebody, you know, running for a high school student council.
Right. Yeah, class president instead of president of the nation. Yes.
Exactly. So I set out to accomplish so much in this book. It took me a while to whittle it down to being just over 200 pages. I didn't want it to be, you know, dry and boring. I wanted it to be interesting. I wanted the book to be a one-stop shopping source for any type of issue that would interest somebody, whether it was a social issue, whether it was on the economy. We've spoken mostly about the economy so far, Steve, but I do have two sections, as you mentioned, the one about our religious rights being denied to us, and the other being what I think actually is the most important political issue there is, which has to do with our abortion laws.
Yeah, right to life. Well, Joseph, we really appreciate you joining us for this discussion about your book, Politics 101, The Right Course, your handbook on current political issues. The author is Joseph M. Weston, Sr. Joe, tell us how to get your book.
Go to the website, politics101therightcourse.com.
Well, that makes it real easy. And, of course, you can go to any online retailer and search for the book, and also walk into any bookstore, and you can order the book. Politics 101, The Right Course. Joe, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve, for the opportunity.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Abbott Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.